What the Health with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Good morning and welcome to What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. If you're a regular listener, then welcome back. And if you're new around this neck of the woods, then here's a small bit of information about myself. I'm an online health and fitness expert. I have a BSc in sports rehabilitation, and I'm a former head of medical performance in professional football. I've been helping people feel better, move smarter, and get incredible results for over a decade. And if you are sick of dodgy influencers or people with incredible genetics giving you online health advice, you're in the right place. Because every week I cut through the confusion of the internet, we discuss relevant topics, and we help you get clarity on these topics so that you can make better decisions in your own health and fitness journey. Each week I'll be joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and bust myths. This week we are focusing on male fertility and flu vaccines. Joining me now to discuss this further is Rebecca Traylan, who is Head of Nutrition at Zeta West Products. And they develop fertility supplements and they support people navigating fertility. Rebecca, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm really good, thank you. And thank you for having me on this morning as well.
No worries. Thank you so much for joining us. Right, we're going to jump straight into this super interesting topic. So what are the biggest factors that influence male fertility today?
Yeah, so I'm actually really happy as well to be talking about male fertility. I think it's a topic that isn't discussed as much as female fertility, but we know it has a really key role. And I think more males now are taking a really key interest. So when it comes to sort of the modern world that we're in now and looking at male fertility, a lot of the factors are controllable factors. So we're thinking about diet is the biggest one, lifestyle. Exercise plays a really key role. We also do have other things like when we think about environmental pollutants, also plays a role, weight. But I'd say the biggest sort of one that we can manage is diet when it comes to male fertility.
Yeah, and you know what? I have heard a lot about this, and I worked for a brand actually for the last 12 months. It's only recently just finished, and it was a testosterone clinic. And one of the biggest things they talk about is exercise and food. And yeah, kind of how people's diets and lifestyles are actually causing a big negative effect on male fertility. And like you said at the start, there's always a big push on, not push, but there's a big conversation on female fertility and what females can do. But there's a lot that blokes can do, really, really is. Like shifting your lifestyle and actually, you know, working on what you need to is important, right? This is an important topic.
Yeah, 100%. And actually working with men who are going through fertility challenges with a partner, and they've had like a sperm test, and then they've taken some supplements and made some lifestyle changes, and the impact that it's had on their sperm results is absolutely incredible. And I think actually men are almost in some ways quite a lucky position where they can get their sperm quality tested so easily, get the results, and they have really measurable things they can do to improve it. And it's really clear that improvement. Whereas for females, it can be a little bit more difficult. We can't really test directly for egg quality. So actually there is a lot that men can do. And I think there is a lot of value in understanding actually about these factors, like you're saying, about diet, about lifestyle, and how they can be impacting. And actually for men, you're producing sperm consistently and constantly, so actually it doesn't take, it's 3 months and we can see a significant improvement in those results.
And what role does nutrition play in sperm health and overall male fertility? Would you say it's like the biggest thing that someone can change and work on?
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of the first things I would be looking at. There is so much nutrition that is directly related to sperm quality. So in this seminal fluid, it's really highly concentrated in zinc. So that's why when we think of male fertility, often zinc comes to mind. Folate, otherwise known as folic acid, mm-hmm. is often referred to as a female sort of fertility supplement because we know about the reducing the risk of neural tube defects. But actually, folate is really important for DNA integrity. Well, actually, sperm, all it is casings of DNA. And the most important role of that sperm is getting the DNA to the egg. So we want to be thinking about the DNA inside the egg. So folate's really important. Selenium is another one we hear about as well. Also really important for sperm production. It's an antioxidant, really important for the quality. And omega-3s. So omega-3s are essential fatty acids. They line all of the cells in the body, including the sperm cell, keeps it nice and flexible. And a component of omega-3 called DHA is really concentrated in the sperm head, which is really important actually for the attachment of the sperm to the egg. So there are so many incredible nutrients that are playing a direct role in actually the sperm production and sperm quality. But then we know from just a general looking at the whole body point of view, we know actually having a healthy weight is going to be really important. Yeah. We know having a really high amount of like trans fat, processed food, is going to cause inflammation in the body. This might impact hormone health, think about testosterone. So yeah, diet's really interesting because it has a very direct effect, but then also when we're thinking about the whole body effect as well.
Yeah, and it is interesting. So, like you said, basically, to get stronger swimmers or sperm or whatever you want to call it, if there are any, you know, other words out there, then great. You know, like you said, omega-3 is super important. You said selenium, correct?
Selenium, yeah.
And then was it folate as well?
Yeah, folate and then zinc.
Okay, so going off what you've just said, specific foods. You obviously mentioned zinc as well. So what? Is there a specific food alone, or is it just, like we said, tidying up the overall diet, improving the overall body composition, and kind of, you know, going from there? Because you said about 3 months, you said a male can really improve his sperm count and the strength of his sperm, which is pretty great, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really great. So it's like 72 days for like a full maturation cycle. So that is why actually you just need to be looking at sort of a 3 month timeline. And yeah, in terms of food, so actually very rarely will I do this, but honing in on actually specific food group. But there's been incredible studies actually with nut consumption and sperm or swimmer quality. And there's some great studies looking at 60 grams of nuts per day. So it's a mix of like walnuts, hazelnuts and almond, had a significant impact and improvement in the overall quality. And we're thinking here about the number, we're thinking about motility, and we're thinking about morphology, so the shape of them. So that I think is incredible, because that is a really simple thing you can do, just a handful of nuts each day, a really healthy snack, and that has a really significant improvement. And it's because of these nutrients like zinc and selenium, which are found in nuts, and also have some healthy fats in there. So that is one where I really want people to focus on, and I always say that's the first thing I would be doing, is if you can't change your whole diet, is just include that.
So nuts to help your sorry. Nuts to help your nut.
I know. I didn't go there, but I'm glad you did.
I couldn't stop smiling. I'm sorry. I'm smiling like a Cheshire cat, and I'm thinking, don't say it. So nuts to help your nut. Okay.
Yeah. It's like nice and easy to remember. Great. So yeah.
Education is key. Anything else?
So then we are looking at actually the in terms of dietary pattern, a Mediterranean style diet, because here we're getting, which come back to time and time again, I'm sure people are bored of hearing of it, but it is really key. And because you're hitting those really key food groups, so I mentioned antioxidants, really important for oxidative stress in the body, which we know can directly impact sperm quality. So here we're thinking about berries, citrus fruits, dark leafy greens, things like spinach, broccoli, kale, lots of whole grains. Again, it has nuts and seeds in there as well. Some healthy fats, so you can still have meat, but we're thinking lean meats, and reducing our intake of very processed meats. And oily fish as well. I mentioned at the start omega-3. Oily fish is one of the best sources. So things like salmon, anchovies, mackerel, really, really key to include as well. So I'd say, yeah, the Mediterranean style diet is the one that we constantly go back to. And we do know that it has the best overall health outcomes.
Well, it helps with female fertility as well. I remember you mentioning this before for females. So overall maybe there are stats out there. I don't know. Is Europe more populated, or does Europe have, or does the Mediterranean kind of region have a better fertility rate? I'm assuming there is, because if, you know, if you're the expert and you're suggesting this, then there must be data out there to prove that, you know, they are better at maybe conceiving.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms, Yeah, it is hard with sort of studies, because there's also a lot of things that are affecting fertility,
Of
like
course.
social norms. But in terms of longevity, which we know actually longevity can also be linked with a male's sperm quality. So actually, we see men with higher sperm quality also have better longevity. So there is loads of links, and we do know that countries who are in that Mediterranean basin do have better outcomes in terms of longevity and future health. So we know that there's some loads of links. But actually, when we look at sperm rates, we actually see a decline globally. So all countries are showing that sperm rates are declining. So whether that is due to an increase in things like processed foods becoming more normal, there's also some research actually looking at like cell phone usage, so technology and how that's impacting. We're also looking at environment as well, so environmental pollutants, plastics. So yeah, there's sort of two narratives going on, but actually we are seeing a global decline in sperm numbers.
Okay, and yeah, like you said, probably from the way of life and how things have completely changed. Now, exercise and stress levels, these influence male fertility as well?
They do, yes. So exercise, actually from both sides of it, lack of exercise can also have a negative impact, but also too much exercise, because we know that high amounts of exercise can also cause inflammation in the body.
That it can.
So it's about finding that balance. And yeah, when we're thinking about stress, both poor sleep, all of these things as well are going to drive. Again, we're thinking about inflammation in the body. It's going to impact these things. Also, when we're thinking about stress, one thing we do come back to, there's been a massive craze with magnesium at the moment. And we actually do know when the body's in a very stressed state, it's going to be using magnesium more and more likely to be depleted. And we know magnesium is needed, things like testosterone and sperm quality. So we do want to be thinking about these lifestyle factors as well.
Okay, and men, do they need fertility supplements as well, or can most support come from just diet alone and obviously exercise, but and decreasing stress, but obviously not too much and not too little?
Yes, yeah, which I know is very hard, but not very prescriptive. It's like Goldilocks finding that perfect balance.
But I think everyone's different, right? I think obviously this is, I see every spectrum, every part of health and fitness, you know, and I think for me, I have people that, you know, I've had clients in the past who trained 7 days a week, twice a day, and I'm like, wow, like you must feel awful because you're just so depleted all the time, and then all of a sudden you give them more food and you drop their load and they're like, oh wow, I feel amazing. And it's like, oh, funny that, you know, there is such thing as too much of anything is bad for us, too little of anything is too bad for us. So there is
No,
always a happy medium.
exactly.
Sorry, I'll let you
Yeah.
continue about supplements.
No, that is interesting. Right, there's happy medium. So my stance on it is the first thing I want to be looking at is diet. I would say that there's no point loading your body with supplements if you're not following just sort of the basic dietary standards. And even if that all that is maybe having a handful of nuts and maybe just reducing your intake of some processed foods, like some sugary drinks, just removing a few things and adding in some nuts. I would say if that is your starting point, then great. And then, like you're saying, adding in some exercise. And if that is just a 20, 30 minute walk per day, brilliant. That is great. So I would say start there first. And for the majority of people, this might be enough. I would say, though, if you are then someone who maybe is having pretty dietary restrictions, if you're following a vegan vegetarian diet, you might need to add in some specific supplements. Or if you've been trying to conceive and it's taking maybe longer than just generally it's about a year to conceive, so it does take time. But maybe if you are looking at the 6 months mark and you're thinking maybe I need to add some things in, or if you've had a sperm analysis and things have come back poor, that's when I would be looking at adding in some specific supplements to help. But I would say definitely diet first is what I'd be looking at.
Okay, and quickly, whilst you've just mentioned it, sperm analysis.
Yes.
How easy is it to get seen privately? Can you go through the NHS? Like, what can listeners do if they're kind of sat there, like, oh, actually, sounds like I want to try this, or, you know, I want to give this a go, or, you know, I kind of like the partner I'm with, I want to potentially start trying for a baby.
Yes, yeah. So I believe with the NHS, it's only available if you've been trying for over 12 months. And that's the same normally with females. They're not going to investigate unless you've been trying for 12 months and you haven't had any success. However, there are plenty now of private tests that you can get. Obviously, this does cost, so that's a factor to consider. However, generally, it's a relatively simple and quick process. And I think looking at whether you want to test or not, it really comes back to who you are as a person. I think some people really like the power and knowledge of having a result, and they know exactly, they have really clear guidelines of what they need to do, where they need to improve. And I think for some people, it can be really helpful. For some people, it can just cause a lot of panic and stress. And I think also if you haven't done any changes prior to the testing, sometimes it's not going to be very helpful, because like I was saying, actually sperm only takes 3 months to show a significant improvement. That's the maturation cycle. So I think it's definitely, they're a really useful tool, but I just think be really mindful about sort of what kind of person you are and how you will sort of, how your body will, or how your mind will process those results, and yeah, where you are in sort of your fertility journey. But yeah, there is, yeah, plenty of options that you can get them privately as well now.
So long and short, if you're trying the same thing over and over again and you're not getting anywhere, you probably need to change what you're doing, because a lot of people are very stubborn. Knowledge is power. I'm a big believer of knowledge is power, and without knowledge, we know nothing. So yeah, I get that some people might get stressed from it, but the reality is you've got to make the changes, or the change isn't going to happen, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think for so long, something I mentioned at the beginning is fertility has always been thought of sort of a woman's problem. Mm-hmm. Where we now know it's not, 50% of cases are due to male factors. I think it is really important that actually men are also accountable for that, and they are being aware that what they're doing is really important and plays a role as well.
Yeah, well, I know of someone from back home years ago who was, you know, trying for a baby, and he stopped going to the pub, and all of a sudden that kind of helped because he was drinking beer all the time. Not that that's obviously the sole reason, but alcohol's not the best for it either. I mean, you're the expert again. You might be able to kind of
And I think actually a lot of the advice that we have for women, we say quit drinking, quit smoking, reduce your intake of caffeine. It's the same for men as well, but often you'll find that a woman will be making all of these changes, changing her life or her diet, and a man will just be carrying on as normal. But we now know that that's not actually healthy or what we should be doing. And actually, a lot of what is recommended for females, the male can do the same. And I do think that if your partner's also cutting out alcohol, just do it with them.
It's nice to have it together.
It's much easier.
I couldn't agree more. Like, it takes two to tango. You need to both work at it together. Any common myths you hear about fertility for men?
The biggest one that I hear is that age doesn't matter when it comes to male fertility. I think females, we have it drilled into us that after a certain age, our fertility falls off a cliff, and a man thinks, well, that's not a problem for me. It's never going to affect me. I will be producing sperm all the time, and I don't have sort of an age cutoff as such. It's not true. Whilst men will be producing sperm throughout their life, we actually know that as you age, the quality of that sperm does decrease. So that is really important when you think about it, because it's the, like I mentioned earlier, it's the quality of that DNA. That is the DNA that's passed on to your offspring. So that is probably the biggest myth that I hear, that actually age isn't a factor when it comes to male fertility. It very much is.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that, and I didn't realise that as well. So I thought that, you know, you could be going for years, but apparently not.
And I know that there are some celebrity men that have been going for years, but
strong
we do
swimmers,
know that
lots of nuts.
Lots of nuts, yeah, they must be there. But yeah, that's probably, yeah, the biggest one that I hear. And again, it doesn't mean, and this isn't, again, scaremongering people thinking, gosh, if I'm over 40, is that going to be an issue? It's not that. It's just actually being aware and saying, actually, maybe if I am slightly older, then I need to be thinking more seriously about my nutrition, my lifestyle and supplements.
Yeah, and I agree. I actually skipped a question that I wanted to ask you, because I consume a lot of these, and I shouldn't openly admit it, but I do, because I've got nothing to hide. Energy drinks or high caffeine intake, is that bad for your fertility? I don't remember you mentioning something overly on that. If you have, then I apologise and I'll let you
mention. No, it's okay. So to be honest, I also would recommend cutting those out as well. I did briefly mention caffeine is something that we recommend reducing for females when they're trying. Okay. And again, I'd actually recommend for males to reduce. Doesn't mean cutting out altogether, but reduce. Okay. And caffeine intake, I would just be really cautious about some of the ingredients that are used in there. So it would be something that I would also recommend reducing.
Okay. And common beliefs like tight underwear reduces fertility or hot baths are bad, you know, are there any truth behind these as such? Or maybe you have another one that you've heard that you might want to throw into the basket or throw into the mixer?
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you asked this as well, because I think we're at a time at the moment where it seems like saunas are the biggest trend ever. And everyone is like, if you're not saunering, then what are you doing? Yeah. Well, actually, I hate to say it, but saunas aren't great for sperm health. And it's the same theory what you're saying about the tight underwear, hot tubs. Actually, the testes don't like heat. That's why they're sort of outside of the body. Mm-hmm. So anything that's going to cause excessive heat is going to damage them. Yeah. So actually, and again, the great thing for men and male fertility is you're only looking at a 3-month period. It's not like if you've sauned for the last 6 months that all your sperm is sort of useless. It was just a 3 months. You would have to maybe, I would say, stop using the sauna, stop using hot tubs, be mindful about the underwear if it is very tight, particularly we're thinking more so with underwear and actually exercising. So I know there's a lot of things sometimes about like male cyclists and wearing lycra. Yeah. Again, there is some truth to that, very tight, and there's a lot of heat being caused. Yeah. So it's just for that period of time when you're trying to either cut it out or just really reduce it. But yes, actually excessive heat can cause an issue. There's even things about having a laptop on your lap if it's causing a lot of heat. That also can impact as well.
Yeah, I heard that one. I did hear when I was younger that in regards to the heat, obviously if the testicles are too far away from the body, because obviously what they do is they go lower and lower. Obviously they don't go down to your knees, but they try and go further away the hotter they are. Is that why they're meant to sit a little bit higher? And that's why, I mean, yeah?
Yes, exactly. Perfect. So they all like help, regulate. But yeah, it's just, trying to really avoid that excessive heat is really important.
Okay, right. We're going to have time for a few more questions, if that's okay with you. How big of a role is stress? You mentioned at the start, like, We've spoken about nutrition and diet. Is stress the next one on the list? Is that solely, can that be more than just kind of like work stresses as well? Can it be life stresses, financial stresses, stress in general, lack of sleep, overthinking? What exactly could it be?
Yeah, stress is hard because it's something that we all experience. And for someone to say, oh, just stress less or worry less, it's not realistic.
That makes me stress.
It makes you more stressed, to be honest. You're completely right.
It does.
But we do know that actually stress does have a really big role when it comes to fertility. And it can impact some like our hormonal axis in the body, which are producing like testosterone. We know testosterone balance is going to be really important. I mentioned as well about actually how chronic stress can deplete magnesium in our body. And magnesium is really important for like our hormone regulation. It all can impact in sleep as well. So stress is definitely a factor. But again, it is about, yes, if I manage stress, it's easier said than done. So it is about finding the things that you find relaxing and you can incorporate in your day that is achievable for you.
Okay. And that leads me on to my last question, and also works really nicely. What are some small realistic changes men can begin making today to support their fertility? We've spoken about the start, food, kind of join in with your partner. Is there anything else or anything that you'd, like you said, just start with the nuts or start with something in particular?
Yeah, that would be actually, going back to my nuts, that would be the biggest thing, is go out, buy yourself a bag of just mixed nuts. Unfortunately, I'm going to say, make sure they're not salted. Even though they are very tasty salted nuts, actually then very high sodium intake. But that is my biggest thing. Buy a bag of mixed nuts and just have a handful a day. And I think that alone can have a really positive impact.
Rebecca, amazing, super insightful. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much.
Can the listeners find you online, social media, website, Zeta West? Tell us everything.
Yes, so you can find Zeta West products. We have a website. We also offer free consultations with myself and another nutritionist as well. If you want a bit more personalized advice, we're on Instagram as well at Zeta West products.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. You have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again. Take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be speaking with TV presenter Vanessa Phelps about her personal experience with flu illness.
FUBAR Radio.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
We store so much of our trauma and our energy in our body. I am just incredibly, incredibly tired of keeping this trauma locked inside my body. And so all I needed to do is release it. You know, it's like going on a bender and drinking too much booze and you throw it up because you just need to get that out of your system because it's gonna catch up with you at some point if you don't.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with George. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Joining me now to discuss the dangers of flu in winter is Vanessa Phelps. Vanessa, good morning. How are you?
Hello, good morning. Very well, thank you, and I hope you are too.
I am. Thank you so much for asking. Right, you have had a first-hand experience with winter flu with your family. So you've had your daughter, Allegra, who was hospitalised in 2022 with flu. Can you take us back to the moment where you realised her flu wasn't, you know, something you could manage at home, really?
I certainly can. I mean, I, like many other people, had studied at school the story of the terrible Spanish flu
pandemic that killed more people in 1918 than the First World War did. I knew that somehow. I'd learned that at school, but it didn't seem to translate into real life for me and my family. I just thought the flu was a relatively minor thing. You know, when people, you have a bit of a temperature, you got a bit of a sore throat, a bit of a cold, you go to bed for a day or two, and then you say, oh yeah, I had a bit of flu. And I sort of thought that was what it meant. And then my daughter Allegra in 2022, just in the run-up to Christmas, so she was 36. She is very slim. She's very fit. She's a mum of two. She's a lawyer. She's very active. She's sporty, you know, suddenly became unwell. And I thought it was going to be one of those, I don't know, 24-hour, 48-hour temperature things, you know. But she got iller and iller. She was so, so sick that she literally couldn't lift her head from the pillow. She couldn't keep water down even. She was feeling just absolutely chronically ill. Anyway, in the end, she was admitted to hospital. She was lying in a hospital bed on a drip. I'll never forget it, as will, you know, no mom or grandma or any family member who loves someone very deeply and sees them effectively flattened by something that's obviously, you know, really serious. So to my absolute amazement, the consultant came into the ward and said, well, your daughter, we've had the results, has flu. And I said, flu? I said, but she's had the jab. You know, she paid to have the jab. And he said, yeah. And just imagine what I might be telling you now if she hadn't. So that stuck with me, as you can imagine. It's not a moment you'll ever forget. No, for sure. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about it today, because I think it's so incredibly important to realise what a serious illness flu can be. 7,700 people in the United Kingdom last year died of flu. So you definitely don't want that to be you, and you don't want it to be anybody that you love. And so I think if you're eligible for the flu vaccine, please go and get it. And if you're not, it's a jolly good idea to pay for it. It's just under 20 quid. I had mine the other day and I paid for it.
Yeah, and great advice. And what was going through your mind? Like, obviously, I'm sure you felt pretty helpless. And I'm hoping and I'm assuming everything's okay now. She's feeling so much better. It was a while ago, but, you know, just double checking.
Yes, she's all right now. I mean, she's fine, thank you very much. But I would say that, you know, a bout of real flu, not sort of, you know, the one of your 48-hour non-flu, just a bit of a bad cold things, but if you actually get flu, you will certainly know it. And in fact, the wonderful and inimitable Dr. Hilary Jones puts it this way. He says, if you have a cold or you're a bit under the weather and you see a £50 note lying on the pavement outside your window, you'd be able to go down and get it. If you've got flu, the real flu, there's no chance of that whatsoever. There's no way you could go downstairs, open the front door and walk out and get a £50 note. You're much, much too ill. So Allegra was in hospital for, I think, something like 4 to 5 days and nights. Wow. And then she went home and it took her, I would say, about 10 days or maybe a little more to feel anything like herself. If you have real flu, it leaves you really drained, absolutely weak, a little bit shaky, takes you ages to get back on your food. You know, it's a really depleting, debilitating illness if you have flu. And so, you know, lots of people who think, oh yeah, well, it won't affect me. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm fit, you know. They're thinking that it's going to be something that might take them out of the workplace and might take them out of family life for a couple of days. But if you get the real variety or unlucky enough, then, you know, you're out of work probably for at least 2 weeks, and it takes a good 10 days or more after that to feel anything like yourself. And of course, it's being said that we're gearing up for a really particularly unpleasant flu virus in this country this winter, because we follow usually the Australian and Asian model, and that's what's happened over there.
Ah, so I didn't know that. We actually had Dr. Hilary Jones recently on the show to talk about the vaccine and vaccines, so it's super interesting that you obviously mentioned him. Now, how did the experience affect your wider family, like especially Allegra's young children? Because she, like you said, she's a mother of two.
Yeah, it was absolutely devastating, as it is, you know, when any family member's rushed into hospital, it always feels chaotic, you know, because you're always hoping you can, you know, manage it at home and, you know, she'd be on the mend and asking, are you feeling better? And would you like some chicken soup? And, you know, what can I do to make you feel better? Let me make your hot water bottle. Let me make your hot drink. Yeah. And then you see this person that you love with all your heart actually getting worse and worse. Every night goes by and it's a night of torment. You know, they're roaring with temperature. Then they're dripping with sweat. Then they're coughing a horrible horrible hacking cough, dreadful sore throat. Then they find they really are losing energy to the point where they're really not capable of speaking. Allegra was so ill, I'm not joking, that when she was in hospital, she was lying on a drip, she was unable to talk. She just didn't have the energy to do that. So you can imagine for her children, for her husband, you know, I'm her mum, you know, for everybody who loves her, it was a really salutary lesson. And I think there isn't a single one of my family this year who hasn't had the vaccine, because obviously none of us want to go through what we saw her going through. And obviously we wouldn't like anybody that we love or we know to go through that, or even the people that we don't know. It's really such a short, sharp shock. And, you know, it can lead, as I'm sure Dr. Hillary explained, you know, to sepsis, mm-hmm. and in the worst cases to death. So it's something you don't want to have to think about. But I think that the fact that you can arm yourself for less than £20 against it is jolly well worth doing. And I had mine, as I say, a couple of weeks ago, paid for it in a chemist shop in Hendon. And I'm really glad I did. It makes me feel as if I've done the best I can to protect myself. Not only that, but of course, the other people that you meet, exactly. who may be immunosuppressed, who may be old, who may be frail, who may be pregnant. You know, you don't want to stand any chance at all of passing it on to them. So it's not only a selfish thing to keep yourself from getting it, but it's also, you know, for those other people that you might infect with it if you do.
No, and I agree. I think what you're saying is absolutely great advice. And obviously it's first-hand experience, isn't it? Many, many people think the flu is, you know, just a bad cold. Like, after what you've seen, what do you think the biggest misunderstanding is that you want to correct? What do you want to let the listeners hear and understand that, you know, it's not just a bad cold?
Yeah, I want to correct this supposition. I felt it myself, so I'm not judging anyone for thinking this. It just happens to be wrong, that's all, is the idea that if you get one of those 24-hour temperatures or a bit of an upset tummy or you feel a bit under the weather, you know, you get into bed, you nestle in with the electric blanket, and you know, watch a bit of telly, have a couple of, you know, hot drinks, and in 48 hours or so you feel absolutely better, that you think that that's flu. That is not flu. Real influenza is nothing like that. It's a serious and debilitating illness. You will know you've got it. It is nothing like just feeling under the weather for 24 or 48 hours. You know, flu's the kind of illness where you have to think about getting up to go to the loo because you feel so ill, so debilitated. Your legs are shaking, you're freezing, you're boiling. You don't feel like yourself at all. And you think, I really must get up to go to the loo. I really must. But just summoning the energy to get yourself there is such a huge ordeal that, you know, you might even spend a couple of hours contemplating it because you feel so, so weak and sick. And I'm not saying this to frighten people. I'm saying it because it's true. It really is. The difference between real flu and a few hours of not feeling yourself is so huge and so formidable that if you get flu, you'll certainly know it. You won't have to ask anyone. You'll know that you're really very unwell.
Well, you've got a first-hand experience, haven't you, with your family? So it's not, I wouldn't say it's scaremongering or anything like that. It's just the reality,
no.
Right? You've experienced it. You've been there. You've been, you know, in the room with your daughter, and it's frightening stuff. It's not enjoyable. Why do you think...
That's absolutely right. I just want to say that, you know, when the consultant came out holding the piece of paper with the test result on it, and he said, it's flu. You could have knocked me down with a feather. Honestly, she's lying in a hospital bed. She's 36 years old, slim, fit, healthy, vital, very active. You know, I love her with all my heart. Mm-hmm. And she's lying there. She looks a kind of peculiar colour between sort of almost like chalk white but green at the same time, mm-hmm. if you can imagine. She is, you know, unable to speak. That's how ill she is. She's lying there on a drip and it's flu. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness. But then I'm also thinking, hang on, Vanessa, you knew this. You knew about all the people who died after the First World War in 1918 in this Spanish flu pandemic, which killed more people than the whole First World War did. I did know that somewhere deep down in my sort of history O-level days. I did know that. But somehow I'd lost the grip on it. I'd sort of thought that flu these days wasn't a big deal. And I was wrong. And I don't want anyone else to get the terrible, terrible shock that I did. And I, you know, I'm lucky because my daughter is fine now. She's absolutely fine. This is now 3 years on. She's, thank God, in a, you know, great, great nick. But not every family can say that. So that's why I'm talking to you. That's why I want to do this.
And why do you think the vaccination messaging is something that is ignored? Why do you think people ignore it? Do you think they're just, oh, it's too much hassle? Or do they just think, oh, it's not going to happen to me?
I think they just think, oh, it's flu. It's not a big deal. I think they just don't understand what a big deal it is. I think they haven't quite got the message that flu is a serious illness. You can end up hospitalized. You can end up with sepsis. And God forbid, it can kill you. And I think people just assume that it's a nothing much thing. It's not really a big deal. Sort of thing that goes away after a couple of days. They don't quite get it. And I was one of them. That's why I feel I've, you know, learned the lesson the hard way. And I wouldn't want other people to learn it that way. And also, you know, however healthy you are, however young, however fit, however much time you spend at the gym, however much you manage to brush off a cold and, you know, you can't remember the last time you went to your doctor and all of that. Nobody wants to be so ill with a really proper bout of the flu that they're taken out of life and fun and love and laughter for 2 to 3 weeks. It's just not worth it. So your 20 quid or just under will buy you at least a good level of immunity from that experience. I reckon it's a good investment.
And looking back, is there anything you think you or Allegra would have done differently before she became extremely unwell?
No, because she did have the jab, you see. That's the key thing here. The jab won't necessarily protect you entirely from getting the flu, but what it will do is increase your chances of not having to be admitted to hospital and, of course, hugely increase your chances of not having such a virulent infection that it causes you sepsis or even worse, death. So it's really well worth having. So, no, she was prepared, but the fact that she could have been so desperately ill having add the jab just shows you how important it is to have the jab. Have that in your arsenal of weapons against being ill this winter.
Yeah, very, very true. And Vanessa, thank you so much for your time. First-hand experience, super insightful. Hopefully the listeners are going to take your word for it. Just thank you very much for your time, and you have a great rest of your day.
Great pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I hope you have a happy Christmas. Lovely talking to you.
Take care, Vanessa.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Right, guys, coming up after this short break, I'll be answering some listener questions.
FUBAR Radio. Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this.
Yeah.
You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know, you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
So we've got Dr. Matt Morgan. Someone's heart stopped beating for 8 hours.
So he was stuck on a ledge in a freezing snowstorm. Mm. And his heart stopped for an amazing 9 hours. He's still the world's longest surviving cardiac arrest patient. And he lived because he was cold. You know, there's a saying, you're not dead until you're warm and dead.
What the Health with Georges Bertineau, exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Now it's time to answer some of your fitness questions. So if you want to get involved, you can DM us at What the Health Show on Instagram. But we are actually going to start with some blind rankings of fitness trends. So producer Yaz is going to tell me a random fitness trend in my ear, and then I'm going to blind rank them 1 to 10. Right, let's hit it. Cold plunges. Oh, my God. I think they are awful because they're cold, and I also don't think they really do as much as people think. I think it's more of a morning routine. It's more of a, oh, look at me, I'm better than you because I do a morning plunge. Grow up, don't care. That is going number 7. Seed oils. Jeez, okay. I'm putting everything really low right now. That has to go below cold plunges. I just don't get the obsession with kind of like seed oils and being, oh, you shouldn't have this, you shouldn't have that. I think a little bit of everything in your diet is absolutely fine. Oh, gosh. This is going to go 8. Oh, my gosh. What have I done here? So juice cleanse is coming up now. I'm going to put that as 5th. Oh, my, no, what am I doing here? Juice cleanse 5th, purely because it probably serves a purpose for some people's lives, but it's not really something that I would recommend. Next one, hit it. Infrared saunas. What am I doing here? Infrared saunas, they are... Everything's going at the bottom. I think all of these are awful. Infrared saunas. So red light therapy is great for skin, but from a performance point of view or fitness point of view, this has to go 10. Intermittent fasting. This is going to go number 2. Because although I don't believe, and I'm pretty sure there is no research to back that it actually does anything inside your body, I think depending on your fitness goal, it is really, really good to reduce your calorie window. So intermittent fasting, number 2. Dry brushing. Wow. Dry brushing. Where are we going to put this? So I'm going to put this 9. I actually had dry brushing when I was a youngster. So it actually served a really good purpose. Was it dry brushing? I can't remember if it was. I think it was. But I'm going to put it at 9. No reason other than, I just wanted to put it at number 9. Right. Sports massage, wow, so good. This, I can't put that number 1. Do I put, no. Sports massage is going to go 3 because of how good it is for performance, freshness, recovery, how good it really, really is. And the evidence behind it is super, super backed. Would have probably put this 2nd if I hadn't put intermittent fasting there. Mouth taping. I actually do this. I do think it helps with recovery. It helps with sleep. Do I think it's number 1? No. So we're going to go mouth taping number 4. Oh, calorie counting. Got to be number 1, surely. So calorie counting for me is the only way you can get results with everything that you do health and fitness related. That is performance, that is muscle gain, and there's muscle loss, that is improvement of overall energy, happiness, health, all of it. Calorie counting is king and queen. Number six is red light therapy. Well, there we have it, people. So, blind ranking fitness trend, starting from the bottom. It was infrared sauna, number 10. 9, dry brushing. 8, seed oils. 7, cold plunging. 6, red light therapy. 5, juice cleanse. 4, mouth taping. 3, sports massage. 2, intermittent fasting. 1, calorie counting. Let me know what you guys think. If you think that's a good list, if not, send in your suggestions and I will happily blind rank them on another show. But personally, I actually think that's pretty accurate, if I'm honest with you. So I'm actually really impressed with myself. So thank you for that one. Right, guys, moving on to some listener questions. I'm new to the gym. What are three things you wish you knew earlier? Oh, this is a fantastic question. So, three things I wish I knew earlier. How important food really is to us. So, that means eating in a calorie deficit or a calorie surplus, not just eating everything under the sun or hardly eating. Like, actually understanding how, if I have 500 calories more every day, that's 3,500 in a week, which is not going to be, it's going to be a pound of weight gain. Now, back when I was younger, it would be all the food under the sun. It would be weight gainer. It would be this, it would be that. And depending on your age, depending on your expenditure, depending on what you do, that works really, really well. And there are lots of health and fitness people out there that do that. It's called dirty bulking. It's called eating everything under the sun. But also it then makes it really hard when you go to cutting and makes things a lot harder. So I would say understanding food, understanding periodization. So that is changing your programming every 6 to 10, maybe 12 weeks maximum for freshness, for strength improvements, increased stimulus or stimuli so that I can build more muscle tissue. Because, you know, I still look at bodybuilders and people in the health and fitness industry and go, how have you got those muscles? How have you got that shape? And the third one is genetics. Understanding that people have insane genetics. There are people out there who have the perfect insertion for biceps, for shoulders, for chest, for back, for legs, for glutes. If you're a female listening and you want to have a big dumpy, you want to have a big peach, you want to have a massive bottom, and you don't, you might just not have the genetics, but it doesn't mean it can't get bigger. It doesn't mean you can't stimulate it. You can't do, you can do everything you need to grow it. But some people just have those genetics. So yeah, they would probably be the three things. Understanding food, understanding programming or the amount of gym that I need to hit, and understanding how genetics and how some people just are super genetically gifted. Next question. Is it better to have a big meal right before the gym or right after? Right after. I would suggest high protein, high carb post gym. There's no such thing as an anabolic window anymore. Technically, it's like 48 hours, but we won't go into that right now. Long and short is have a big meal after the gym. Refeed yourself, refuel yourself. You'll feel so much better. Is it okay to gym on an empty stomach? Was also part of the question. Yeah, there are people that do it. I do it. Sometimes I've only got coffee, a dash of milk, or maybe two or three coffees in my body with a dash of milk and a pre-workout. And I'm not hungry. It's because my body works on timings. And that's kind of how my body works, you know, with food. Next question. Do I always have to find a spotter when doing bench press or only when I'm lifting heavy? Will I be able to lift heavier with one? You will 100% be able to push yourself to the limit and push yourself so much better if you have a lifting partner. A lifting partner is so much more vital than people actually realize. Like, I have been there. I've trained with friends. I have not trained with friends. I train alone, and I've trained alone for a large percentage of my life. If I had someone there who had the same goals, who pushed me, who told me one extra rep, knowing that I wasn't going to decapitate my head because the bar landed on my neck. Not that that's ever going to happen. You're going to land it on your chest and, you know, you're going to be able to roll it down your body or slide off the weights or whatever. But a spotter is 1,000% an incredible idea. If you don't train with someone, that's fine. We all go to the gym. Don't be afraid to ask someone. Some people are better than others. I have seen people spot in the gym and the bar's not moving and their hands are already on the bar. Don't touch them unless they're going down or they are stuck. Okay? Rule 101 of spotting. Next question. Any tips on making training fun again? I've lost the passion. Yes, actually. Find a new program. Try something new. Have you tried Hyrox? Have you tried CrossFit? Have you tried German velocity training? Have you tried bodybuilding? Have you tried classes? Have you tried anything that isn't what you've been doing? Have you tried circuits, for example? Anything that isn't what you've been doing is going to make you feel better. It's going to freshen up your sessions. And all of a sudden, before you know it, you are going to feel fantastic again, and you're going to find the passion for it. And that is all we have time for today, people. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. A massive thank you to Rebecca, Vanessa for joining us today on What the Health. Both fantastic topics. A reminder that you guys can download the app and listen each week, and you can also follow us on social media. We are at What the Health Show on Instagram. If you want any help with your health and fitness goals, I provide a top-tier coaching service with no BS. It is problem-solving. I hold your hand every step of the way. I am not a liar. You can contact me at Georges Burt on Instagram or at gb.fitness.health. Also, the show is available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. A massive thank you from me. I'm back next week for another jam-packed show. I'm Georges. Thanks for listening. Love you. Bye.